Grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance this evening. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome on the first floor of this house. Please do not go upstairs. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. As a group, we believe that Alcoholics Anonymous provides alcoholics with a set of clear directions on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of simple actions. These actions are contained in the book Alcoholics Anonymous. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism on the basis of AA's simple actions. I will now read the AA preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. And for the next 2 weeks, we will be discussing step 12. Tonight is the first night of two, and I'm going to turn the meeting over to Graham.
Hi, everyone. I'm Graham. I'm an alcoholic.
Graham.
I'd like to welcome everybody to the meeting tonight, and we're almost there. We've got this week and next week, and then we're going to go right back and do it all over again. So David and I set this meeting up in his house a few months ago, in his living room, and the first night there was four of us, I think. And really what we wanted to do, we just wanted to try to replicate what we were doing with people when we met them in Starbucks, when we were sponsoring them. Really focusing in on the parts of the book that had the steps in them, the instructions on how to take the steps, because we really felt that that's what had benefited us. And also we wanted to recommit to doing the steps in our lives again, over on a regular basis. So this sort of came out of that. And, you know, I love to emphasise this. Neither of us are experts in AA. We're definitely not experts on the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We're not really here to teach people about the book. We don't know that much about it. What we're here to do is just to share our experience, strength, and hope. There's other meetings you can go to if you want to learn all about the literature. So anyway, without further ado, let's read some of the book. And so before we get started on step 12, you know, we've done the 11 steps. And really, if there's a theme for tonight, it's helping other people as a solution to the illness of alcoholism. And it's important for me to remember, because I get all wrapped up in me and how I feel and what's wrong with me and fix me. It's important for me to remember that the reason I did those 11 steps were to bring me to a point where I can now get down to the real work that's going to save me and help me, which is helping other people. So anyway, we're going to kick off on page 89, and it's the first page of chapter 7, Working with Others, and we'll just start off at the top paragraph there. So it just says, practical experience shows that nothing will so much ensure immunity from drinking as intensive work with other alcoholics. It works when other activities fail. This is our 12th suggestion. Carry this message to other alcoholics. You can help when no one else can. You can secure their confidence when others fail. Remember, they are very ill. Life will take on new meaning. To watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, to see a fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends, this is an experience you must not miss. We know you will not want to miss it. frequent contact with newcomers and with each other's is the bright spot of our lives. And this just doesn't make sense to me. It just doesn't make sense to me. I come into AA, I'm all screwed up, you know, and I'm a guy who, when I start drinking, I can't guarantee my behaviour. I can't control how much I drink. I usually drink far too much. It just seems like a good idea at the time. Then it's crazy town. And crazy town might last for a few hours or a few days, I don't really know. And I don't really care. But eventually it comes to a stop. I'm filled with remorse, horror at the way I behaved the night before. Start remembering things and I'm just horrified. And I determine I'm not going to behave like that again. And then I behave like that again. I'm a binge drinker, usually do it every weekend. That was the frequency with which I did it. So I come into AA and by that time I was in my early 20s. I had been suicidal for a long time. People would be better off if I was just dead, you know, in my late teens and early 20s. Those were the sort of thoughts I had a lot of. And I'd been for therapy extensively for a year and had continued to drink, had continued to become more violent when intoxicated. Been to the doctor, been to religion. One time went to the birthplace of Christianity in Scotland. St. Columba went there in 563 AD. If you're going to get saved, that's where it's going to happen, baby. And it didn't work for me. I continued to drink. So I come into AA absolutely nutso. Just nuts. I don't know what's wrong with me. And I just can't do it anymore. I just cannot pick myself up and tell the lies and do what I need to do to tell myself that it's going to be okay. I just couldn't do it. Curled up in a ball again like a big baby crying. That's where alcohol and my best thinking got me. And I come into AA and these jokers are suggesting that really the best thing I can do to get over and to get out of my present situation is to help other people. And I'm like, are you kidding me? You don't understand. Let me tell you what's wrong with me and let me tell you how I feel. And they're like, yeah, that's fine, okay. We need you just to start helping other people. No, you don't understand. Yeah, that's right. Just help that guy over there. How about you just be quiet and put these chairs out? How about you make the coffee, you know? And I remember a few occasions where I was just dying to tell these people how I was feeling and what was going on with me. And they basically just ignored me. And I was really peed off that they did that. And I'm like, how can they treat me like that? They're not taking how I feel seriously. And they just keep telling me, you know, Graham, you're a really screwed up guy. The sooner you accept that, the happier you're going to be in AA. How about you go and help these people? Try and get out of yourself by helping other people. So this really has been my experience, although it's certainly not what I believe a lot of the time. I don't really believe this a lot of the time. I certainly don't act as if I believe it a lot of the time. And I think if I'm doing this today, and I try to do this today, I try to do intensive work with other alcoholics, I'm usually doing it because I've experienced the pain of not doing it. And I've come to the conclusion over a long period of time that I'm just better off if I do it. That's really my motive. That's a great motive, isn't it? I'm just better off if I do this. Because if I don't, it's really going to suck. So I'll do it. Okay. You know, and a lot of times that's what it comes to. But like it says here, you know, I would love to just sit around and maybe pray and meditate. And that could take away whatever it is that's wrong with me. You know, and ensure that I would not return to drinking. I'd like to do it somewhere maybe on a mountaintop in some sort of temple and have a robe on, I think. And a lot of people maybe thinking I was a big deal. And that would be nice. Or maybe I could just stay sober by going to loads and loads of meetings. You know, meeting meters make it. So I could go to maybe 5 meetings a day, quit my job. My wife will probably support me. And just go to a lot of meetings. Just do that all the time. Or maybe I could just focus in on inventory and just constantly take inventory all the time and do really drill down on the steps. And unfortunately, you know, it's saying that's not really going to cut it in certain circumstances. And what's going to keep me sober more than anything else is intensive work with other alcoholics. And what that really means is I need to give people in AA my time. And the longer I've been sober at times, the more inconvenient that becomes. Because as I've already mentioned, I'm really, really important. And there's a lot of stuff going on in my life now that I'm sober. You know, I have a job, I'm in a relationship with my wife Heather, and I've got children and all these other responsibilities. But what I forget is that they're based upon my sobriety, upon me staying sober. That's the foundation. So what starts to happen is that starts to take away from this. I can't go to the meeting tonight, fill in the blank. So this really grounds me back in this idea that I need to get out of myself by helping other people. It works when other activities fail. And I have to tell you, there's been some times in my sobriety, like that time my youngest kid almost died, you know. And that happened, I think, on a Monday. And on a Tuesday night, I just went to the AA meeting that I was a home group member. Now, lots of people would say, why is he going to the meeting? He should be there with his wife and the baby. The baby almost died yesterday. The guy's selfish. Yeah, I'm selfish. But I understand that if I go to, I went to the meeting and I think there was a new guy there and I could give him my phone number and I was talking to him about getting sober in AA. And you know what it did? It took my mind off that whole situation. And when I went back after an hour and a half, I was really grounded and I was much more used to the people there. So this really works. This is a design for living that really works when you know what is hitting the fan and things are not going my way and I'm not happy about it. This really, really does work. But I have to show up and do it. And I love this bit about you can help when no one else can. And I remember the first time I really did this, me and another guy went to help this alcoholic. And he was an English guy in Japan and he'd been ripping his clothes off when he was drunk and fighting Japanese people. Just like taking on the whole city. My kind of guy, a one-man army. Come on! You know what I mean? And they were just kicking his ass. Loads of them, doing all that, you know, all those moves on him. And so me and my friend go to meet this guy because he called AA. And he looked wild, his hair was wild, he was just looked crazy. And I always remember this. The most shameful thing that I really did when I was drinking, or one of the most shameful things, is I was the perpetrator of a lot of domestic violence, you know, when I was drunk. And I remember sitting with this guy in this coffee shop called Mr. Donuts. So we were in Mr. Donuts, and we were having a coffee, and this guy, Kevin, was shaking. And I just found myself talking to him about some of the things I'd done when I was drunk. And I'll never forget the look on that guy's face. It's just like, so he was like, these guys understand. And so there you have it right there, the most horrible events of my life. In the right context, I actually reached across to this guy and made him realize it's not just me, there's other people like me. And that's really the power of that. And that guy's sober today, not because of me or anything I did, but he's sober because he joined AA and he got sober. So we really have that power, whether we like it or not, and whether we're comfortable using the word power, you know, but we do. I have, that my experience gives me power in a certain situation to reach across and help somebody who's suffering from alcoholism like somebody did it to me. And that's a pretty amazing thing. And really, I mean, if I look at my life right now, I'm, you know, the job that I do and all these other things that I do, if I really look at the thing that probably has the most impact on other people's lives, it's probably that. It really is. If I step back and look at it, that's probably the thing out of everything I've ever done that has the most impact on other people's lives. Because they, like me, can take that message and apply it in their lives and run with it and be sober. And it changes their whole life and their family's life. And that's a pretty amazing thing to see. And, you know, it leads into this life taking on new meaning. And I'm just so selfish and self-obsessed. All I think about is Graham and how I feel. And that's like on a good day, you know. And then, you know, since I've joined AA, there's been certain times when I've been involved in home groups and so on. And I've really been able to participate in that. And see other people get well, get sober, see their lives change. And it really has been something that that's been very wonderful. And, you know, there's just this idea of having friends. I never really had any friends before. It sounds like a sad story, doesn't it? I never had any friends. Nobody ever really understood me. And the bottom line is I was so selfish and so self-absorbed. I had some people that I used. You know, they were usually people like me, other alcoholics. They were crazy. And they would come and hang out with me and we'd party and all that. But I didn't really have any friendships as such. And what I found in AA was that, you know, I learned how to be friends with people. And I'm still learning how to do that, but I learned how to do that. And what I really had to do to be friends with people was get over my natural instinct for judging people and resenting them and acting opposite to how I feel. And to cut a long story short, this guy that got sober, who I hated, but he was the only other guy where I got sober that could speak English, so I sort of needed him. So I really, really hated this guy, and my sponsor had told me, you know, you just need to act opposite to how you feel. Be nice to this guy. And the upshot of it was that guy ended up being the best man at my wedding 10 years later. So I became friends. That was the first friend I ever had, and I was 25, 26. And I had no real friends before that at all. We were friends, and we were doing this together in common. So I really can't build a life upon this. And then the last bit, it talks about contact with newcomers and each other as being the bright spot of my life. And I have to tell you, when I used to drink, I would have a couple of drinks, and this is what I would experience. It would be like, oh, it was just a big relief. And life really builds up on me, and it becomes a tense affair to be inside my body and mind, sober. It really does become somewhat tense at times. And what I find is, just like when I drank, when I come to AA and participate in Alcoholics Anonymous, I get a very similar sense of relief, of, excuse me, of winding down and a new perspective on things. I really gain a new perspective. A more sober perspective on what's really going on, and a deep feeling that things are okay. And being with other people in AA, which I would never have thought when I joined AA, has actually become something that I really look forward to. I really look forward to coming here on Monday nights. I really look forward to going to the Big Book in Ghent on Tuesday nights. I know I'm going to see some people there, and it's good to see that there's other people who are doing this.
Yeah, I'm the same. I started drinking when I was about 13, and I believe by the time I was 14 years old, I qualified for this program. I got here by accident when I was 22. I had just checked into a little detox center. I wanted to dry out a little bit and cool off, and that's when I met you guys. And I don't remember anything that they said at the first meeting, but I remember I told them that I had to reserve the chemical right to check out a reality or I would lose my mind. I remember telling them that. And so I must have believed that. And I think they just smiled and said, keep coming back. And I stayed sober for about a year because I really didn't want to drink anymore. I didn't want to live that way anymore. And then the time and place came where I would drink again and I would come back to AA. Now, for the next 6 years, I did that. When I say I'd come back to AA, I don't mean I came into AA and I got a sponsor and I got a home group and I started reading the literature and developed a prayer life and did what you guys do. What I mean is I would come in and I would walk in the back of the room and I would hang out in the back and I would listen and then I would leave as soon as possible. But sometimes I would go outside and I would smoke with people and they would tell me stuff. And I think about this practical, you know, this intensive work with other alcoholics. And I know that this chapter is, and a lot of these sentences are geared towards sponsorship, but I always think about the people who listen to me. You guys have always met me where I am. You guys have, and up to and including today, 23 years later, you guys meet me where I am, and you accept me where I am with what I'm bringing, all my flaws, and that was certainly true when I walked in. And when I walked in, I was hostile to the idea that I needed to join your little club, that I had to believe in God, that I needed your phone number, or, you know, I just didn't want what you guys had to offer. And so I would just pick it apart. I'd say, yeah, but what about that? Yeah, but what about, you know? And I'd find somebody after the meeting and I'd talk to them. And basically, what the information that got to me was, David, you might not be an alcoholic. They would just listen to me and say, well, you might not be an alcoholic. But if you are an alcoholic, you're going to find that you can't solve the problem yourself. And you're going to try. And I was like, okay. So that seed got planted, and that's exactly what I did. I kept trying to solve the problem myself. So I came in and out and in and out and in and out. And just that simple idea that I can't solve the problem by myself. So my surrender, my first surrender to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was 28 years old, 6 months abstinent of alcohol, driving around the city of Norfolk looking for buildings to jump off of, because that was the best I could do. That was the best I could do. I did not want to drink anymore, and I did not want to live anymore. And maybe I'll go back to AA one more time, and you guys just welcomed me. And I can remember the man that told me after I picked up that white chip. He just said, and I don't know where he is today. I don't even know if he's sober, but he said, he just looked me in the eye and he said, you don't ever have to hurt like you're hurting right now, ever again. You don't ever have to take another drink, ever again. And you never have to go through anything by yourself, ever again. And then he put it right back on me and he said, unless that's what you want. And that's the trouble. That's what I want sometimes. So I just got, you guys worked with me where I was. I wasn't ready to pray. I wasn't ready to read the book. I didn't even understand what was going on. But you guys showed me through your example and through your description of what it was like when you were drinking, how you felt when you were sober and not drinking. God, how unpleasant that is. That I could put myself in this picture. So the line in here, intensive work with other alcoholics, a lot of times that gets translated to, well, you better hang a newcomer around your neck. And my sponsor told me one time, yeah, you want to be helpful to newcomers, but you can work intensively with your sponsor too. You don't have to export your craziness on the new guy, you know. So he put that idea in my head too right from the beginning, that I need to work intensively with somebody else so that I can get my feet on the path that really goes somewhere. So the other, I love the line, you can secure their confidence when others fail. I don't know why it is. I mean, we're the only people we listen to. Like, we don't listen to the judges, we don't listen to parents, we don't listen to school counselors, we don't listen to, we don't listen to anybody, and we barely listen to each other, you know? I'll just speak for myself. I have a tendency to keep my own counsel. Thank you very much. And I'll take whatever you have to say under advisement. You know? But we come here, you know, why do we come to these meetings anyway? Right? I come here so I can feel better. It says somewhere in here, we meet frequently so that newcomers can find the fellowship that they crave. So we come together and create a context. Something happens here. There's people here who are new. There's people here who don't drink anymore, who've solved that problem, who are living comfortably, who can help. So now here we are. And we listen to one another share. And that process, again, that's just a six-year thing for me just to get to the point where I can say, you're right. I can't do this thing by myself. I need help. I wouldn't say that out loud, you know, but I realized that I could not do it myself. When I didn't know anything about steps or anything else, that was the only piece that came in. So we have the ability, we seem to have the ability to help one another when nobody else can. So me, greedy over here, I came to AA and I just finally decided I'll put my chips on your square. I'm going to do the AA thing and I'm going to work as hard as I can. And I did. Excuse me. For about 6 years. I said yes to AA, yes to the coffee, yes to the intergroup, yes to the sponsor, yes to the inventory. I did all that stuff. And then what ended up happening was not only was I delivered to a place where I was comfortable not drinking and actually enjoying sobriety, I started to get materially successful, romantically successful. The children start to come along and I start to leak away from AA. Little by slowly, I leak away from AA. And the sponsor I was working with passes away. I'm not in a hurry to hire another one. The home group that I'm in, well, they're kind of jerks anyway. And I just, I'll start shopping for another one. And I just never did. And I just leaked away from AA. I was 15 years abstinent of alcohol. All that stuff was gone from me. All the business is failing. The marriage is in jeopardy. Children are indifferent to my comings and goings. I still don't want to drink. But I'm still, now I'm starting to think, you know what? Maybe I need to check out of this world. Maybe I'll go back to AA one more time. So I do. Go back to AA. Start going to meetings. Listening to what you guys have to say. And there were a few people in there who were talking about alcoholism. And there were a few people in there that were talking about the steps. I picked up a white chip at every single meeting for a week. 15 years sober. Because not for no other reason than when somebody said, I would like to try this way of life. Anybody want to try this way of life? I was like, I do. I would like to. And I'd pick up that white chip. And I didn't care if anybody thought I was drunk that morning. You know what I mean? It didn't matter. That 15 years didn't mean anything to me. I mean, obviously it meant something to me, but there was nothing riding on it. So, and I got to tell you, it's appalling how few people reached out to me after that meeting. You know, I was kind of expecting to get a rush of people coming up. Oh, white chip, congratulations, you know. But not a lot of people really did. But a few people did. And the reason I tell that kind of tedious story is that I was 15 years sober sitting in Starbucks bitching about my life when the man who saved my life just stopped me in mid-sentence and said, yeah, AA's full of guys like you. You're suffering from untreated alcoholism. Do you have a home group? Yep. What are you doing for them? What's your prayer life like? Would you like to work the steps? I would. But we're going to work through these steps quickly so we can get on with the business of helping other people because that's why we're here. And I don't know if you guys have been telling me that all along. Maybe you had been. I don't know. But that was the first moment I heard that. Because up until then, you guys were all here for me. You guys, your old meeting was here to make me feel better. And if I walked out that door and I didn't feel better, you didn't do your job. You know? And I'd tell you about it. Not you. I'd tell somebody else. Did you hear what she said? That's bullshit. You know? Oh, my God. So that's how far off the beam I've been in my life. But that simple idea that's why we're here, that's really why we're here. These first 11 steps deliver me to a condition. Everybody talks like the steps are the end game in AA. The steps are the preparation for the end game in AA is the way I understand it today. Those first 11 steps deliver me to a condition where I can be helpful to other people, where I stand ready to be helpful to other people. And not just in a sponsorship context, you know. Welcoming people at a meeting, talking to people after the meeting, you know, doing things I don't feel like doing. So there might be a business deal in that back corner. I could go back up there and pick a couple of $1,000 up if I go talk to that guy. Well, I'm going to leave the other guy twisting in the wind over here. I got to go talk to the new guy. I have to. My life depends on it. As I've continued over the last few years to walk this path and remain open to that idea, I am absolutely seeing this fellowship, this host of friends, this life grow up around me, and this sense of my life having a new meaning, a new purpose. And like Graham described, these meetings are like an oasis for me. You know, I'm out there in my life just like everybody else trying to get it done, whatever that is. And then I get to come here and I get to be delighted to see you. You know, I mean, my heart just leaps coming, you know, when I see some of you guys. So I get the bright spot. And AA used to be a penance. I mean, it really used to be a suffering. I have to go to this meeting, you know, and I look forward to it now. And I used to think that was awfully pathetic, but I've just kind of surrendered to that too. I'm happy to be here. Thanks.
Okay, so now we're going to go to page 91. And we're going to start on the paragraph, See Your Man Alone. On page 91, see your man alone if possible, and first engage in general conversation. After a while, turn the talk to some phase of drinking. Tell him enough about your drinking, habits, symptoms, and experiences to encourage him to speak of himself. If he wishes to talk, let him do so. You will thus get a better idea of how you ought to proceed. If he is not communicative, give him a sketch of your drinking career up to the time you quit, but say nothing for the moment of how that was accomplished. If he is in a serious mood, dwell on the troubles liquor has caused you, being careful not to moralise a lecture. If his mood is light, tell him humorous stories of your escapades. Get him to tell some of his. And now the next part we're going to read, really, the next bunch of paragraphs for the rest of the meeting, these are really very specific instructions on how to carry the AA message to a guy that's suffering from alcoholism or maybe suffering from alcoholism. And it's interesting because I think over time I've got better and better at doing this. You know, I was a guy that couldn't really even make small talk. You know, I was just very self-conscious and I didn't really know how to talk to people at all. So A was a great place to practice that. And then that's gone out into other parts of my life as well. But I always, you know, when I'm in a meeting and you look around and you can usually see the new guy, and he's a lot of times he's sitting on his own, he's very uncomfortable, just like I was at my first meeting, crawling out my skin and hoping that nobody noticed me, and really even being regretful that I'd actually even come into the meeting, like, what am I doing here? You know, that sort of thought, what the hell am I doing here with these clowns, you know? And what was I thinking? And that was, and you know, and being very, very, very self-conscious about my appearance and where I was standing and how I was standing and what other people were thinking of me. And that's sort of the way I was. And it's interesting to go up and talk to somebody who's experiencing that and to try to talk to him about my favourite subject, which is me. And that's the great thing about AA. I'm really just talking about me most of the time, and I love that because I'm really enchanted with me and how I feel and what happened to me. And I love this bit about, you know, it talks about saying serious stories or humorous stories. And I mean, the bottom line is some of the things that I did when I drank were tragic, you know. I've shared this many times in AA, you know, the night I start off the night having a romantic drink with my college sweetheart who I claim to love, and you know, fast forward a couple of hours and she's in the closet and I've got a butcher knife and I'm in a blackout and I'm trying to kick the door down and kill her. You know, that was a fun night for everybody, I'm sure. Okay, so there's that stuff going on, and that's the best I can do. That's my best game. And then, you know, a year or two before that, round about the same time in college one night, I go out with the boys for 2 beers after college on Friday night. I've got no money. And with no money, I managed to get everybody absolutely wasted. And then I'm in a blackout. And then what happens in the blackout, I don't know. I just wake up in my parents' house and I'm in my bedroom and the floor is absolutely covered in pornographic magazines. Dozens and dozens of these magazines all over the floor, and my father is standing in the door looking at me and he's not happy. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then it comes back to me how I'd got them and how I'd got them to the house. And I'd broken into a newsagent in the middle of the night, which is 50 yards from the local police station, and loaded my bag up and walked home 6 miles in a blackout with my booty. How do you explain that to Dad? So, you know, that's funny. That was a funny escapade, and we could all share stories like that, the tragic or the happy. But the bottom line is that the power that these stories have, they're not stories, these are things that I actually did, that actually happened to me, is like David said, they really reach across that tremendous isolation that I experience as an alcoholic. And the real revelation for me in coming to AA was, I'm not alone. It's not just me that this is happening to. It's happening to all these people too. And they're not drinking anymore. They've found a way out. They've solved the problem. And that is really what saved my life, was people telling me tragic things and funny things that happened to them when they drank. I identified with that. And I'd never heard people talking about that before. And there you go.
Yeah, I love this paragraph because it doesn't say anything like take the cotton out of your ears and stick it in your mouth, you know, sit down and shut up, you don't know nothing, you know. I hear a lot of people share that kind of thing, and I wasn't treated that way when I got here. I didn't, which is not to say that I got called on in meetings, which was a relief to me because I was absolutely terrified that somebody would call on me to speak at a meeting. I would say for the first 6 months in Alcoholics Anonymous, I knew what everybody's shoes looked like in AA. I knew what the carpet looked like in the room. I mean, I could not look anyone in the eye. You know? I just couldn't. And I remember the first sponsor that I worked with. I remember just I was able to sit still long enough to sit in the meeting and listen. And be frightened that somebody would call on me, but if I kept my head down, nobody would do that. And then, but I was able to share with people after the meeting, I was able, somebody would say something in the meeting and I would relate to it, and my sponsor kind of gave me a vocabulary for that. He said, look, if somebody says something in a meeting that you relate to, walk up to them after the meeting and say, thanks for sharing. I really got a lot out of that. And then just let them talk, because they will. And they did. And I thought, that guy's a genius. I'm gonna listen to him, you know. But I couldn't do that. It had to be explained to me how to do that. I was like, you got to walk up, you got to go talk to these people. I don't want to talk to anybody. I'm uncomfortable, you know. And so he gave me a vocabulary to do that. And I was able to talk to people outside the meeting. And I was able to feel more increasingly comfortable with people. And that was the topic. The topic was drinking, what it was like. And what we did, humorous, tragic, all that stuff. Sometimes it gets a little competitive in here sometimes, you know. It's, oh, you think that's sick? You know, this is the only place where they'll reward you for being more twisted than somebody else. So I was going somewhere great with that, and I've lost it. But again, in this paragraph, it basically tells me stuff like, if this guy wants to talk, David, let him talk. If this guy, you know, is in a serious mood, here's how you deal with that. And the sponsor that I work with today, whenever I call him, I'm like, hey, man, I got a guy. I don't know what to do with this guy. He'll say, have you read the chapter Working with Others yet? And no, I just wanted to call you, and you give me the short answer. And I want to shortcut it. And he gave me a little tip. He just said, listen, if you're ever having trouble working with somebody, just get quiet, say a little prayer, think of that person, and then read this chapter. And every time I've done that, and I'm not saying I've done that 1,000 times, but every time I've done it dozens of times, every time I've done that, it just leaps off the page. If he wants to talk, let him talk. I have a tendency to want to moralize and lecture. I have a tendency to think that I know the right answer, and I'm going to deliver it to you somehow, you know. Well, nobody, alcoholics don't appreciate that. I don't appreciate that when somebody's doing that to me. And over again, you know, he's going to tell us. We just tell our stories. That's what we bring. And what my sponsor said to me is, David, the only thing you have of any value is your experience, strength, and hope. And you can share that. If anybody wants your opinion, they'll ask for it. And I remember thinking about that and being a little bit insulted by it. But I've been waiting for a long time. Nobody asked me for my opinion. It hadn't happened yet. My wife doesn't ask for it. You guys don't ask for it. So I get to share my experience, my strength, and my hope, and we get to walk together. That's my understanding.
Great. Okay, we're going to go now to page 94. And it's outline the program of action on page 94. Outline the program of action, explaining how you made a self-appraisal, how you straightened out your past, and why you are now endeavouring to be helpful to him. It is important for him to realise that your attempt to pass this on to him plays a vital part in your own recovery. Actually, he may be helping you more than you are helping him. Make it plain he is under no obligation to you, that you hope only that he will try to help other alcoholics when he escapes his own difficulties. Suggest how important it is that he place the welfare of other people ahead of his own. Make it clear that he is not under pressure, that he needn't see you again if he doesn't want to. You should not be offended if he wants to call it off, for he has helped you more than you've helped him. If your talk has been sane, quiet, and full of human understanding, you've perhaps made a friend. Maybe you've disturbed him about the question of alcoholism. This is all to the good. The more hopeless he feels, the better. He will be more likely to follow your suggestions. So, it's pretty clear here, you know, when I'm talking to the new guy, that I should explain to him the simple actions of AA, you know, and what it is that, as a sober AA, I do on a regular basis to maintain sobriety, and, you know, how I had to go through the steps in the AA program. And it's interesting, you know, because I've been in AA a long time. I mean, I've not been in AA as long a time as a lot of people in this room, but I've been in AA like 15 years, you know. I've been coming to AA. And And over that time, I've reached out to dozens and dozens of people after meetings, you know, and because that's what we do, right? We offer to help people, give them a phone number and so on and so forth. And out that number of people that I gave my phone number to and reached out to, a very small number of them called me. And then an even smaller number of them would actually meet me one time. And then apparently they didn't like what I was saying because I wouldn't see a lot of them after that anymore. But maybe it's my accent, I don't know. But anyway, it put them off or something. But the bottom line is what I'm trying to say is, you know, and even out of that group that did meet me, an even smaller group, you know, went through the steps. And I've been in the States for like 8 years, and I was just thinking, I was reading through this and just thinking about it, and there's a bunch of guys that when I first came here, I sponsored them in Virginia Beach, and I took them through the steps, you know, like we're doing tonight, sat with them at Starbucks, they got through the steps, and they were active AAs, and we were in a home group down at the oceanfront, it's still going, it meets on Thursday nights. And I think Monday nights is a speaker meeting, and they've got a big book study on Thursday. And we were a little group of guys, and we were all active. We used to drive up to meetings in Richmond and go to meetings up there. We used to go to meetings all over the place. And it occurred to me that none of those guys go to AA anymore. They just don't go anymore. And I was thinking, like, why do they not come to AA? And why am I still coming to AA? And why are they not? You know, and I don't know if they're drunk or not, but the last time I spoke to two of them on the phone, things sounded somewhat tense, you know, and because they haven't been going to AA, they've graduated. And it really was impressed upon me when I was new, and I try to impress it upon other people, a sense of fairness about all this. So here's really what I'm doing. I'm coming here with my you-know-what on fire. I've burned my life to the ground by drinking, selfishness, all the stuff that goes with alcoholism. Help me, help me. And the people in AA, like a 911 emergency crew, they run in. Okay, we'll help you. Meet me at Starbucks. Bring your big book. Say some prayers. Join a home group. Get a sponsor. Let's do the steps. Come on, let's do step four. Let's do it, baby. And the people in AA are there, and they're there for me. They're praying for me. They're helping me. And it's like, yeah. And after a while, you know, I make my amends, get this job, I meet the love of my life. If I'm lucky, they're not in AA. Sorry, I didn't say that, sorry. Anyway, so I meet the love of my life, and then the next thing you know, it's like, you know what? Those people in AA are really, really selfish. I can't be bothered helping those guys in AA. They make me sick. They're just all talking about themselves all the time. Sickening. I want to hang out with the love of my life and my colleagues from work, and I'm going to join a gym. Yeah, I'm going to join a gym and get in shape, or etc., etc. I'm going to get a hobby. I'm going to join a church. And on it goes, and the next thing you know, I've left AA and I'm not going to AA anymore. And the problem with that is if you're an alcoholic like I am, then the thing that my whole sober life was built upon, I've now taken it away. And I believe I've now taken myself away from whatever God is. Because my experience of whatever God is happens here. It doesn't happen there. It happens here. So now I'm doing it on my own again. And I've seen that happen to so many people. And it's almost happened to me these last 2 or 3 years when my second kid came. It's very, very difficult to put a stake in the ground and keep coming to Alcoholics Anonymous and keep that commitment. But there is a sense of fairness about this. And like it says in here, I'm stuck up in my mind in this idea that I'm here to get helped. And what this chapter keeps telling me over and over again is, listen, dummy, you try to help that guy and that's how you get helped. And that's what it says over again. Whatever my problems are, I love to talk about my problems and think about them. I've got some problems right now. You want to hear about them? I need 2 hours after the meeting and I can bring you up to speed. Okay, there's a lot of stuff going on with me right now. A lot of serious issues at the core of my being that I need to talk about. And you know what AA really says to all of that? It's like, yeah, okay, Graham, this sounds fine. Listen, we're kind of busy right now helping these people that are dying of alcoholism. How about you just come over and help us with that instead? And that's really the idea in here, is I constantly get refocused Because I think the solution to my problem is to talk about it. That's why two times in AA I got so screwed up in recovery that I went for therapy. And you know what they told me both times? We've got these pills that will make you feel better. And it's $80 an hour. And I never went back. I wanted relief. And when I came back to AA, guess what they told me? They said, Graham, AA's full of people like you. You're suffering from alcoholism. And that's how you feel when you're stone cold sober and not doing AA. It doesn't feel good, we know that. And there's a solution in AA. And it's not a secret, Graham. We told you the first time you ever came here what it is you need to do. You need to join a home group, get a sponsor, and take the steps, apply them in your life the best you can. Say some simple prayers. Get out of yourself by helping other people. Those are the things that you need to do. And if you'll just do that, whatever it is you're experiencing right now will pass. And I have to tell you, it really has worked. But to this day, after 15 years, a part of my mind still doesn't think it's really going to work until I actually do it. And that's the problem with this, is I have to do it. And I don't like doing it. I want to think about it, or talk about it, or tell you how to do it. But I don't want to do it. And that's really what I need to do, is I need to do it and apply it to myself. And when I do that, what it says happens is what really happens. These problems, these issues, I hate that word, issues. These problems in my mind get solved. And I don't actually have to do anything about it. And that just sounds crazy. But that's really what happens. Or else they just don't seem like such a big deal anymore. So that's the good news. There really is a solution to alcoholism in here. But I need to keep doing it.
Me too. It's important that he realized that your attempt to pass on to him is a vital part of your own recovery. That make sure that he feels like he's under no pressure. He talks about a sane, quiet, and full of human understanding talk. You know, and I think about the men who've led me in this thing. And the very first sponsor, when I asked him to, I mean, I stuttered through it. I was just my sponsor, you know. And he said, "Yeah, I'll be your sponsor, but you're going to do the things that I've done. I'm not going to ask you to do anything that I haven't done. And if you're willing to do that, I'll help you. But we're not getting married." We're not friends, and this is an open-ended deal, you know? Any one of us can walk away from this at any time, and he gave me that freedom right on the front end. The sponsor that I work with today kind of shows me that through his example. The last fifth step I sat down to do with him, and I had all the attendant, you know, kind of butterflies and stuff getting ready to confess this stuff. He offered a little prayer, and he looked me in the eye, and he said, "I really want to thank you for letting me hear this, for letting me hear your inventory. I really appreciate it." And I realized I was doing something for him. And, because it's all about, I'm the same. It's all about me, all about me, all about me. He's just a walk-on part in my play, you know. The thing I guess I want to mention, a lot of people ask me, how many guys do you sponsor, David? And I never know how to answer that question, because I've got several guys, two or three guys that I can't keep enough track in front of their train. I mean, they're calling me every day. They're showing up. If we're on an inventory, if I show them how to write an inventory, they show up the next week with it, and they're just I can't keep enough track in front of their train. I can't keep them busy enough. I got other guys who call me every couple of weeks, maybe give me the activity report. You know, what's going on with the money and the honey. And then I got a bunch of guys that have asked me to sponsor them, and I don't hear from them again. And I don't really spend much time on that other than when somebody asks me, how many guys do you sponsor? Because I don't know. Is it just the guys who are busy? Or is it, you know, I really don't know. So, but I know that. And the other story that I'll tell about this that changed me was when I first started working with the man that I work with today, I would call him up, and I would do the little bitching about whatever the complaint du jour, or the injustice du jour, or what they did at the meeting last night, or what they did, and he'd say, "That's none of your business. That's none of your business, David." And I would kind of pretend I knew what he was talking about, and move on, you know. And I'd kind of meditate on that, and he did it to me enough that it pissed me off. And one day got me in the right mood, and I was bringing him something. He was like, "That's none of your business." And I said, "Well, do you mind telling me just what is my business, mister?" You know. And I really, there was a part of me really thought I was going to stump him, and he didn't miss a beat. He knew exactly the, you know, he just said, "Yeah, your business is to trust God, clean house, and help other people. Just for today." "Oh, thank you." "That makes sense." So, anyway, that's it.
Okay, that's the last paragraph we're going to read tonight. It's on page 96, right up at the top. Page 96. "Do not be discouraged if your prospect does not respond at once. Search out another alcoholic and try again. You are sure to find someone desperate enough to accept with eagerness what you offer. We find it a waste of time to keep chasing a man who cannot or will not work with you. If you leave such a person alone, he may soon become convinced that he cannot recover by himself. To spend too much time in any one situation is to deny some other alcoholic an opportunity to live and be happy. One of our fellowship failed entirely with his first half dozen prospects. He often says that if he had continued to work on them, he might have deprived many others who have since recovered of their chance." This used to upset me about 88. One of my first sponsors, I used to watch him, and sometimes he'd be with new people, and I think, "That guy's really cold-hearted. You know, he's not like me. I'm a nice guy. I have a warm, loving heart." This guy Lance would just sort of say things to newcomers, and I'd be like, "Oh my God, how can he say that to them?" You know? And I tried it myself when I was first in AA. I sort of called the people in AA's bluff, and I made a sort of veiled threat to go and get drunk. And the guy just said, "Yeah, that sounds like a good idea." And I was like, "Are you not going to try?" You know, I was thinking, he's not even going to try and stop me. And he was like, "Yeah, you know, and if you want to come back to AA, we'll still be here. We'll still be sober." And he just sort of went off the phone right away. And I'm like, "Well, that didn't go how I planned." Because I thought he was going to come round maybe in a big bus that said AA, you know, emergency on his side. They'd be like, "Graham, no, don't do it. No, please. You're so important. Please don't drink." And that's the wonderful thing about Alcoholics Anonymous. And here's the bottom line. Look around you in this room. This is a collection of the most selfish people in Tidewater in this room. And the reason I feel so relaxed about talking in front of you all is I know that none of you have listened to a word that I said. Because during the whole meeting, I'm sitting here thinking, how do I feel? What am I doing tomorrow? She's looking at me. I don't like the look of that guy down the front. There's something wrong with him. That guy slighted me at the coffee pot. You know, so, you know, that's what I'm like. That's what's going on in my mind. So it's not just me, is it? So the bottom line is, you know, people, I'm very ruthless about my recovery. I have to be. I have to stay sober. And, you know, I think it's clarity about the message. You know, the message of saying some simple prayers, not taking the first drink today, joining a home group, getting a sponsor, doing the steps, participating in AA. That's the message, the simple message. But I think also with the message, there has to be, so we've got clarity, but I think I also need to express some charity, you know? Because I think that message can be delivered in a real mean way to people, you know? Like, you have to break some eggs to make an omelette, and, you know, if you don't want it, screw you, and all that sort of stuff. And, you know, if you want that kind of AA, you'll find it, believe me. But, you know, I think that, like David said, nobody ever really treated me like that in AA. People have always given me their time, and they've been pretty... Yeah, I'm not the easiest guy to be around at times. And if you think I'm bad now, you should have seen me 15 years ago. So people in AA have always cut me a lot of slack and just sort of accepted me the way I am, knowing that if I don't drink and keep coming here, there's a chance I might get a bit better. So am I now going to be really mean to new people and run them off? You know, not at all. So I love that about this. It's a very easy thing. It's just like, you know, this is what we're doing. Come on in. The water's nice and warm. Come and join us. Let's do this together. You know, people in here are not up here and the new people down there. We're all in the same boat. If you want to help us row this boat, if you want to help us in Alcoholics Anonymous, come in and help. And if you don't, that's fine. That's absolutely fine. We like you anyway. And we'll be here if you choose to come back, and we'll still be doing these same things. Because what we've discovered is a way of life and a design for living that really works in rough going, no matter what's going on in our lives. We can get through this, but it's all based on me helping other people. And so I think we give everybody the chance, right? And if they don't want it, that's fine.
Yeah, I was absolutely appalled when I called that first sponsor. I said, I feel like drinking. And he said, well, why don't you call me when you don't, maybe you should go have a drink. Why don't you call me when you don't want to drink anymore? And I thought, well, I don't want to drink anymore. Okay, now we can get somewhere. Let's see. That's us. We're going to pass the seven tradition basket. Seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. Money's collected. Let's see, that's not what I'm actually not reading. The seven tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also the intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose, to help the alcoholic who still suffers. The amount of our contribution is secondary to the spiritual connection that unites all groups around the world. Are there any announcements for the good of AA?
Jason Alcoholic.
Hey, Jason.
12th anniversary dessert extravaganza for the depot meeting, January 13th, 2012 at 6 at the Fred Hewitt Center. See me after a meeting if you need more info. Thank you.
Thank you.
The 17th of January, is that
14th.
Right? The 14th of January. We have a supper and a speaker here, and it's going to be at this church. It's at a regular Monday night spot. We're going to be eating at 6 o'clock, and the speaker who's coming down from Ocean City, he's going to be talking from 7 to 8. Everybody's welcome. If you feel inclined, please bring a covered dish to share.
There's plenty of flyers out on the coffee table as well. Please take those back to your home groups and talk it up. We're really excited about this event on January 14th. Any other announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group, please see one of us after the meeting, home group members. There's literature available. We've got big books for sale. There's stuff you can fold and take with you out on the coffee table, meeting lists, harmonies, other event flyers, etc. Is there anybody here tonight, not to embarrass anyone, but just so we can get to know you by first name, is anybody in their first 30 days?
I'm Chris, I'm an alcohol addict.
Hi,
hey, Chris. Welcome.
Welcome.
Anybody else? All right. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. Would anyone willing to be a sponsor, please raise your hand. All right, I'd like to thank all who participated. After we clean up, all are invited and encouraged to continue the conversation on the step discussed tonight. All are welcome to attend the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Bella Pizza tonight on Colley Avenue. Lots of people can help you with how to get there. Bella Pizza, it's easy. Is anyone inspired to read the last two paragraphs on page 164? Chris?
Sure, I'll read it. I'm Chris, I'm not
Hi, Chris.
Our belief is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who's still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you will, of what you find, and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.
Thanks, Chris.
Let's close the meeting.
John's in the mess.
Yeah, nice. I get it. When you say it, I'll try to repeat it.
Chris, you want to take us out?
Me?
Yes.
Oh, is there any other one? Sure. God? Who brought us here?
Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Thank you. It's good to see you. How you doing?
How does it work? It works fine. I remember you were helping fix the pot.